Ghosts, cryptids, murder, conspiracies, beer, what, the ale. Hello, friends.
Hello, hello.
Welcome back to What the Ale. I'm Alana Ray.
And I'm Mama J.
And before we get into your topic this week, Mama, what are you drinking and do you have any What the Ale moments?
I am drinking an Elysian Night Owl Pumpkin Ale.
Oh, wow.
Because we had it at a friend's house around Halloween and they gave us some to take home. So that's what I'm having today because I had some leftover from Halloween festivities.
Nice.
And let's see what the ale. Yeah, I think my what the ale is that today is my baby's sweet 16 and I cannot believe my youngest child is 16 years old.
Yeah. Wow. I'm in shock. Are you in shock?
Yeah, I mean, it just goes so fast and she's my baby and, you know, yeah, it's so fun to see her develop into like, you know, closer to her adult self, but I just can't believe how fast it all goes.
Yeah, no, 100%. It's like so wild to me just how big she is. I texted her at midnight here, which I know is 9 p.m. there, but I texted her at midnight and I was like, it's midnight, you've aged. And then she was like, thanks. Like classic,
Yeah.
you know, very. So I
Yeah.
think maybe I'm more excited than she is.
Yeah, well, I think she doesn't have any plans today and she decided not to do a party or anything because she did a big party for Halloween and she wants to do one for New Year's Eve. So she decided not to do a party or anything. So she said she didn't want to do anything, but now I think she's kind of bummed that she didn't do anything. So
Yeah.
yeah. So
I
I'll
get
make her a
that.
nice dinner and do all the things, but
Yeah.
yeah, I just can't believe how big she is.
No, I get that. That's, yeah, crazy, crazy times.
Yeah, what about you?
Well, I'm having a rabble rouser from Democracy Brewing here in Boston. It's yummy. I've had it before. So yeah, that's been good. But let's see what the L moment. Oh, a wild one is I ran into my ex-boyfriend yesterday. So that was
I was
fun.
wondering, I saw that you were at a particular bar and I kind of had a feeling you would run into him if you went there. I was surprised you went there knowing he was in town.
I knew that. Okay, so I've been doing a little Insta stalking, which I know is like not healthy, but like whatever. I knew that he was going to a hockey game, and I assumed the hockey game was at night. I didn't realize it was like a matinee game. So he like showed, so I went when I thought, oh, he'll be at the game. He was there because I wanted to watch the basketball game. So anyway, that was like awkward and whatever, but you know, it's fine. Actually, I kind of like mic dropped him and then left him alone on the subway platform, and that felt really good. So,
Okay, good.
I don't know. I mean, not that I condone like ex bashing or being mean to exes, but sometimes they deserve a kick in the butt. So that's how I feel about this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my what the old moment. It's been a wild ride, but.
Yeah.
Is what it is. Well, do you want to get into your topic this week?
Yeah, so I decided to cover a super what the hell story about a woman who really took advantage of a man and it did not end well. So I'm going to tell the story of Abraham Lee Shakespeare.
Oh, I know the story.
Know this one?
Yep, I know this one.
Yeah. So Abraham Shakespeare was a man. He was born April 24th, 1966. And he was somebody who kind of had a little bit of a rough start. His family struggled financially when he was a kid. So in seventh grade, he dropped out of school to help his family. And he worked in the orange groves with his dad. And then around the age of 13, he ended up having to serve 5 years in a juvenile center for, some kind of like burglaries or, he was stealing things. So they held this boy 5 years. So he was not released until he was 18. So basically, his whole childhood was stolen from him. But it seems like when he got out, he was trying to do the best he could to make money. So he was working for like his friend Greg Smith, who owned a barber shop, and he would like sweep hair for him. And then there was another man that owned a local shop, and he would like run errands for him, and he was known as Poppy. But everybody really liked him. He was like just a good person and trying to do the best he can to get his life together. So, it seems like he was just like really well respected in the community. But he around the he was got a job working at like a food delivery place. And so, but he had dropped out in seventh grade, so he wasn't good at reading and writing. So he couldn't drive. He didn't have a driver's license. So he had a partner named Michael Ford, and Michael would drive, and then they would like unload the deliveries together and all of that stuff. So he and Michael were on a run, and they stopped at a convenience store called Town Star in Frostproof, Florida. And his coworker decided to like go into the store and get some cigarettes and like snacks or drinks or whatever. And he asked Abraham if he wanted anything. And Abraham just gave him some cash and asked him to buy two lottery tickets. Yeah. So Michael went in, bought the lottery tickets, came back to the car, gave them to Abraham. And later that night, Abraham learned that he had won a $31 million jackpot in the Florida lottery.
I mean, good for him.
Yeah,
That's awesome.
which is very cool. So he decided to take the lump sum payment, which means that they take all the taxes out ahead of time, and so he ended up getting around 12.7 million, and this was in 2006. And Michael Ford came to him and tried to demand that he give him $1 million, saying that he should share the money since Michael went into the store to buy the ticket. And Abraham refused to give Michael $1 million. So Michael sued him and alleged that Abraham had stolen the ticket out of his wallet. But the jury didn't buy that story, and they ended up siding with Abraham and ruled in his favor. So he didn't end up having to pay Michael out any money. Now he had like an on and off again relationship, but a good relationship with the mother of his first son. And but he had been behind on some child support payments, and so he with the lottery money, he paid back his back child support, and then he started, he had been on another relationship, and they had recently had a baby together. So he by all accounts, he seemed to be in good relationship with both of his children's mothers, and he seemed to be a really good dad, a really involved dad, like wanting to set his kids up for, success and good things. And he tried to be a very active parent. So that was good. And then, once he had the money, he bought himself a house and a car. And the money was like obviously could be very life-changing money that could have provided him with a really comfortable life. But of course, he wouldn't be on this podcast if it had gone well for him. And this is like a very good demonstration as to why people should keep it quiet when they come into money. Like, seriously, if I ever win the lottery, no one would ever know. Like, I would live my little simple life, and I would buy myself things, or I would, invest, or, get a new house, but something reasonable or whatever, and I would travel. But like, I would not let everybody know how much money I had, because he just had people coming out of the woodwork to try to get loans from him or just gift money. And a lot of the loans, people took saying their loans, but they had no intention of repaying.
Right, of
So,
course.
he was giving out lots of money, and he was like very generous. Like he would just give people $100 bills on the street, if they looked like they were in need. So he was
Wow.
very generous with his money. But over time, he started getting really frustrated with everybody and felt taken advantage of.
Of
And
course.
he did make some comments that he wishes he had never won the money. And he was realizing that some of the people that he thought were good friends of his, he realized that a lot of them were just coming around because they wanted something from him. So
Right.
he did start feeling pretty lonely and depressed. And again, he kept saying things about wishing he didn't have the money.
Wow. I mean, that doesn't surprise me. It's one of those things where, again, it's really sad, but people really do. Some people are just really motivated by material things, and unfortunately, it makes sense that people were taking advantage, but it's sad.
Yeah. Well, and I know that you have a cousin that was a professional football player. And I remember back, this was long ago, but back in the day when he got a big contract, I remember him saying that he wrote like $5,000 checks to all of the, cousins or whoever the people were that he knew might, have a handout. And he wrote everybody a check and was like, "That's all you're getting. Don't ask me for anything else." And I was like, even setting some kind of boundaries like that is very helpful when you have people asking you to like co-sign on a house or a car or just give you the money for those down payments or whatever.
Yeah, no, exactly.
So anyways, but another struggle that Abraham had was that he had limited education and he struggled with reading. So he had no idea how to manage his money. He didn't know anything about taxes or investing. And I
Right.
want to stress, like, I doubt most people would know how to manage that much money.
Yeah.
So, it would be wise to get a financial planner or someone that could help with investments. But unfortunately, rather than finding someone who could educate him and help him invest, he found another predator. And this was Doris Donegan Moore, who was known as Dee Dee. And she convinced him that she would be able to help him invest his money and like protect his money and protect his assets. At the time that he met Dee Dee, he had only about $1.3 million left in cash, and then he had $3 to $4 million in assets, like houses and cars and stuff. But he had gone through or given away the majority of his money.
Right.
So let me tell you a little bit about Dee Dee before I tell you about how they met. So Dee Dee was a woman who, at first glance, she seemed like a normal human trying to find success. Like, she worked at a medical staffing company and she seemed to have a good head for business. But while working at that company, she also had a side hustle working for Nextel selling phones and phone plans. And then Dee Dee and another friend, Karen, decided to start their own business selling the phones and phone plans, so kind of taking what she was learning from Nextel and then branching out. And Karen was listed as the company's president because it was her idea, and then Dee Dee was the vice president. And then while working the side business, she was able to convince her main job with the medical staffing company to allow her to open a new branch. She seemed to be doing well with the new branch for a while, but eventually the higher ups noticed that a lot of money was going out, but they weren't seeing much profit. So they started an internal investigation and realized that Dee Dee had started a payroll scheme that had cost the money or cost the company approximately 100, I'm sorry, $62,000. And so the company was planning to take her to court, but before they could see her in court, Dee Dee's branch just happened to catch on fire mysteriously, and all the files were destroyed.
Interesting.
But a lot of the equipment that Dee Dee enjoyed using was saved, and she had taken that out before the fire, like days before the fire. So, computers or things like that that she might want to keep, somehow ended up getting out before the fire.
Yeah,
So,
it sounds a little bit like maybe it was arson.
yeah. Well, and that's what they all suspect, but they couldn't prove it. So she was never arrested or charged for the arson, but everybody believed it was her. And so obviously she was fired from the job. And then around that time, she was also fired from Nextel due to another fraud scheme that they noticed. And then they prevented her from selling their phones or plans through her own company, too. So, her family started struggling a bit financially because they had been doing really well. And then suddenly all of that went away. So she was arrested a couple of times for shoplifting. And then she wrote a bad check to the county tax collector, which, I don't know if y'all know, but you shouldn't mess with the tax man because he will come get you. So, so she had, been arrested for that. And then she and her family were evicted from their place because they were so far behind on payments. And then she also got a notice that her car was going to be repossessed. And she made it clear to the car company that she was not going to let them to take the car back. And this is where it gets very crazy because a few days later, she was found in a ditch by a man driving past, and she was dirty and hysterical, and her wrists were tied together. And she said that she was carjacked and raped by three tattooed Hispanic males.
Oof.
And she told the police that they told her that they would let her live if she dyes her hair blonde and they never see her again, which is a weird thing for them to tell her. But of course, the cops start investigating when a man, they start investigating, but then a man calls them and says, "Hey, I have that stolen Navigator in my garage." And he explained that, somebody had paid him $500 to store the car for them. So then they tracked down the guy who drove the car to this guy's house, and he said that Didi told him that she was framing a girl who used to work for her, and she made up a story saying that the girl was threatening to kill her. And so he thought he was helping protect her by hiding the car. So it's like the guy who had the garage didn't know whose car it was. This other guy thought he was doing it to be like a protector of Dee Dee. And, it turns out none of that was true. And then they find another man that they interviewed who said he was the one that drove Dee Dee out to the location where she was found. And he said that while they were driving, she tied her own hands up. And then she told him to slow down, slow enough to where she could jump out of the car and into the ditch. Like, she is so fucking twisted. But, this time she's convicted of the insurance fraud and falsely reporting a crime. So, for each crime so far, she had only gotten probation. And again, even for this crime, which seems like a bigger crime, it was more involved, she still only got probation. Which is really frustrating because I feel like if she wasn't like a white woman, she would have gotten a lot more than probation.
Yeah, probably. It seemed like she did a she's done a lot of shady shit. Like you would think
Yeah, I mean,
she
just
would.
totally a shady person.
No, totally.
Yeah, so in 2002, she and her husband filed for bankruptcy. And somehow, after all of this, she was able to open her own medical staffing company. So I don't really know how she was able to swing that if she had just claimed bankruptcy. But anyways, her business did seem to be successful, and she was making around $200,000 a year. And
Nothing.
then, she and her husband did eventually separate. And this is about the time that Dee Dee will make the acquaintance of Abraham. So they met through Abraham's realtor, Barbara. And it seems like Barbara found Abraham's generosity remarkable and thought that he was just this amazing and kind human. And so she was giving a talk about his journey and like all of the things that he's overcome. And Dee Dee happened to be one of the people that were there for this talk. And afterwards, she introduced herself saying that, she's written a book about her life story and that she would love to help Abraham write a book about his story and how moved she was by his story. And so, by telling Barbara she wants to help him write a book, Barbara decides that she will introduce the two of them. And when they meet, Dee Dee is super good about validating his feelings about people taking advantage of him and reassuring him. that she will be able to help him and get the loans repaid and help him with the investments. And, so she really acted like she understood him and cared about him, and he felt seen and heard and validated, and so he trusted her. And she convinced him to liquidate an annuity account that had $250,000 in it. And she told him to do this so that they could pay his taxes. But of course, all of that money somehow found its way into her bank account.
Yeah, classic.
Yeah. And she wrote the money off under payroll, even though obviously it had nothing to do with her business's payroll.
Yeah,
And
also.
then she convinced him to sign over all of his assets to her. Now, most people believe that she lied to him about what he was signing since he struggled with reading.
Right.
But, this was the $3 to $4 million worth of assets. So his house, his cars, like jewelry, everything in the house, like he signed all of it over to her.
No.
And she says that she bought him all of those things off of him for $840,000. And again, like that just doesn't make sense that he would knowingly sell her $3 to $4 million in assets for only $840,000.
Right.
So, yeah, so totally shady. He clearly didn't know what he was signing. But at that point, he wasn't onto her yet because he didn't realize that that's what it was. And so then she convinced him to set up an investment fund together, and that the money would be kept in, she would say that it would be kept safe in this fund and that it would gain more interest. So they set up Abraham Shakespeare LLC, where Dee Dee was listed as the owner and Abraham was only listed as an authorized signer. And I want to stress, when you're setting up an LLC, you can have multiple owners. Like, there's no reason why they couldn't be co-owners, or really it should have been Abraham that was the owner and then she had some other role. But of course, 2 weeks after setting up the LLC, Dee Dee removed his name as an authorized signer and started transferring money to her business, American Medical Professionals. And then she closed Abraham's LLC without him knowing about it once she cleared out the money.
Wow, fuck that. Okay.
Now, she also convinced him to let her move into his house, and she bought herself a Hummer and a Corvette and was just like living her best life.
Wow. That's yeah, I don't like this lady, man. She's a lot.
Well, and it just makes me so sad because, he was just like looking for anybody that could, like, he felt like he could trust and that would understand his struggle and was, willing to help him learn some things that he didn't know how to do. Because if you grow up without money, you don't know how to do that. I mean, I grew up without a lot of money and, I didn't know anything about how to invest. You have to learn it somewhere. So, him trusting that she was going to help teach him these things, I just feel so bad because she completely took advantage of him. So, but after she starts living in his house, this is around the time that people stopped hearing from him. And his mother normally had regular contact with him, but hadn't heard from him. And as I mentioned, he had a new baby with Centoria. I've heard it two ways, Brown or Butler. And the son was a newborn, and so he had been spending a lot of time with him, and he and her were kind of off and on, and but clearly loved each other very much, and so it would be weird for him to be out of contact with her too. And then his other son, his mom hadn't heard from him either, and so everybody's just like, what's going on? Where has he been? And so he starts making up stories that he's traveling. And at first, she says that he wanted to get away because he was upset with people asking him for money all the time. And he just needed to get away from that stress. And then months later, people were still challenging her and asking where he is. So then she changes the story and says that he fled America because he owed back child support and was afraid of going to jail. But then people didn't believe that because, he had paid all his back child support and was fine. And so then her next story, these just keep getting worse. Her next story was that he had AIDS and he was ashamed about having AIDS. And so he left town so he didn't have to tell people that he had AIDS, which, in this day and age, there's treatment for that. It's not as shameful as it used to be. But that totally was not true. And the final story is the worst of all. She tells this story that he raped an underage girl and left the country to avoid charges.
Why couldn't she just say he's traveling? Like he could, she could have just kept it there.
But she wanted to keep giving reasons of why he wasn't going to come back. So obviously people did not believe any of this. But they just had no idea where he was or how to get in touch with him. So after he had been missing for about 8 months, his cousin Cedric filed a missing persons report with the police. And this was in November 9th of 2009. And the police noticed that, like, in the beginning, Cedric seemed to be like forthcoming and like, helpful. But then when they started questioning him further, he sort of shut down and just wanted, he said he just wanted to report that his cousin was missing and he didn't want to help any further. But as they start to interview other family and friends, they start hearing about Dee Dee and that she's managing his money and living in his house and nobody's seen him. And then they also learn that Dee Dee holds the titles to Cedric's car and her house is in his name, his home loan. And so, and he was making his mortgage payments directly to her. So clearly, he was afraid to share too much with the police because she could really hurt him financially if he did. And it's believed that the home loan was in her name because probably, Abraham had taken out that loan to help his cousin. And then when he signed everything over to her, it became into her name, But, but people just felt like Cedric was afraid of pissing her off and losing everything.
I mean, it makes sense, especially, I mean, people, if they have any sort of like power over you, it's really scary to stand up to them. So I get that. But that sucks.
So then they go to interview her, and she said she's, been texting with him and she offers to send him a message, but told the police it usually takes him some time to respond because of the time difference while he's traveling. And I want to make this very clear. Everyone in his life says that Abraham does not text, that his reading and writing are so poor that if someone texts him, he will just call them back. He never texts back, or sometimes his girlfriend would help him draft a text if he was wanting to text back, but he does not text on his own because he doesn't feel confident about his reading and writing.
That
And
makes
so,
sense.
people just say he will always use the phone. He will always call rather than texting. So nobody believed that he was actually texting with Dee Dee because that's just not something he did. So the cops asked her about the finances, and she showed them the purchase agreement that had Abraham's signature and showed that he had sold all of the assets to her for the $840,000. And then she tells them that, after she sends the text to Abraham, she tells them, "Oh, I'll come to you when he responds. Like, don't come back over here. I'll come to you." And
Interesting.
then, yeah, so the police, leave, and they're trying to continue to investigate. And then they get a call from Centoria, his on again, off again girlfriend, who's the mother of his infant son. And she explains that Dee Dee had offered to give her a $200,000 house if Centoria will tell the police that she's heard from Abraham. And she wanted her to say that Abraham came to her house and they were arguing through a window, and then he got mad and took off.
Well,
Like
that's
the audacity, to ask the mother of his child to lie for her to cover up that, he's actually missing and, whatever. But I really have to give it to Centoria because I mean, to have somebody offer you a house is a big deal. But of
Yeah.
course, Centoria went straight to the police and told them.
Yeah, I mean, good for
So
her.
I know, good for her. Like, seriously, the right thing to do. But I mean, I do feel like a lot of people sometimes will do, you know, what's easier, what would help them financially. So, you know, I think that says a lot about who she is as a person that she went straight to the police. And it probably says a lot about how much she loved him, too. You know, I
Yeah.
mean, that's the father of her child. I'm sure she wants to know where he is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's just such
But
a.
Dee Dee's a fucking idiot for even asking. Like, I just don't even understand why she thought that would work.
Yeah, no, she's desperate. Desperate people do crazy shit, you know?
Yeah. So the police start to learn about Dee Dee's long history of insurance fraud and other kinds of fraud and possible arson. And then they decide to look into the phone records.
Oh, fun.
And as his family and friends have told the police, they were able to see that previous to his like missing, you know, going missing, he had various phone calls all of the time. All of his communication was through phone calls because, again, he doesn't text. So prior to him going missing, lots of phone calls. And then after he went missing on April 6th, the phone calls just stop. And then the texts that Dee Dee says she's receiving are there. But guess what? Whenever he's texting Dee Dee, his phone and her phone are pinging off of the same cell towers.
Yeah, shocker.
Yeah, and they were even able to see one time where she was clearly in a car and his cell phone was moving with her cell phone, which meant the two phones were in the same car and she was sending and receiving the text while driving in the same car. So clearly he's not abroad somewhere.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, and it was clear to everybody that she was the one sending the text. And then his mom had received a letter that there's no way he could have written, you know, and the mom was like, this isn't how he talks. And like, he wouldn't be able to write this because he has limited reading and writing. And Dee Dee even, you know, used language that she thought he would use. So like, she used the N-word and like she used certain phrases that she thought he might use. But his mom
Man.
was like, that's not my son. Like, I know that's not my son. Yeah.
Like, you're a white woman. Do not use the N-word, no matter who
Yeah.
what you're trying to do.
Yeah. But she was like pretending to be him. So,
I hate
but
it.
the mom, you know, the mom knew. She knew that wasn't her son. And
Yeah.
then around Christmas, Dee Dee offered to take his mom out to eat, and while they were out at a noisy restaurant, his mom got a phone call on her cell phone, and you know, Dee Dee was like, oh, you should answer it, maybe it's Abraham. And so, you know, mom answered the call, and there was somebody posing on the other line acting like he was Abraham, and the mom was like, this is not my son, like, I know this is not my son, this is not his voice, whatever. And so she ended up calling the police and telling them about the phone call. And
Right, that's
they were
smart.
able to, yeah, and they were able to, I mean, but the you know, again, the audacity, like she thinks because she's in a noisy restaurant that the mom won't be able to tell that's not her son. Like a mother knows their child's voice.
I was
Like
gonna
there's no
say, I
way.
feel like you could tell pretty
Yeah.
easily. So, like, not just like, I mean, moms especially, but like any family member. Like, I could tell
Yeah.
the difference just like even in text, you can tell, like, oh, this is clearly, you know,
Yeah,
mom or
this person's
whoever.
different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I know you guys joke about you could tell it's me because I misuse emojis because I'm old.
I misuse
But
emojis too. So, you
yeah.
know, it's
Yeah, the kids
fine.
are always telling me, Mom, that doesn't mean what you think it means. So
My favorite thing was when my sibling told me that I'm embarrassingly a millennial, and I was like,
oh. I could totally see your sibling saying that.
that mean? You're like, you're embarrassingly a
Yeah.
millennial. I was like, fuck you.
So,
Anyway, not to di
okay.
totally divulge or divert, but.
But so she called the police and they were able to track the call to a local mall. And so they go there to investigate. And And what do they see when they are pulling into the parking lot? They see Dee Dee's fucking car coming, driving in, and she pulls up to another car and hands the driver of the other car some cash.
Of course.
And so as soon as she left, they came right up to this guy and started questioning him. And it turned out that she had given him $5,000.
Just to make that phone call.
Yeah. And this man was none other than Abraham's friend and barbershop owner that he worked for, Greg Smith.
Oh, wow. Bringing it
Yeah.
back. Okay.
Yeah. So he told the police that she paid him to make the phone call to Abraham's mom and was planning to pay him to make future calls too. Now, I did watch some interviews where Greg clearly expresses a ton of regret, but like, seriously, what the fuck? This was your friend and you were impersonating him and lying to his mom. Like, that's super fucked up. And like, I get that she was giving you a ton of money, but you had to know something bad had happened to Abraham. And you helped her cover it up, or tried to help cover it up. It didn't work, but you tried to help cover it up. Like, you were not a great friend, and I would argue that you're not a great person. And I'm glad he has regret now. But I mean, I feel like, does he only have regret because he got caught and he got called out?
I mean it just it doesn't sit well, right?
Yeah.
Like it just is a bad look, friend.
Yeah. So he does end up agreeing to work with the police to try to get Dee Dee, which is good. So they decided to set up a wire and have her, trying to get her to talk about Abraham. And so he was like a little bit nervous about wearing a wire. So he came up with this like idea where he like cut the top off of like a soda can or something. And then he put the wire in there and put it in the center console. And then he would like ash, his cigarettes in there. He would like, flick the ash into there, trying to act like, so she wouldn't try to drink it or pick it up or anything. So, yeah, but I thought that was funny. He didn't want to just wear the wire. He wanted to do something sneaky. So during those tapes, Dee Dee did admit that Abraham is dead, but
Oh,
she
but
said that, she acted like the victim. Oh, the police are trying to pin it on me and I didn't do it. And then she tells a story about a drug dealer named Ronald that had killed him. And she
okay.
said that she pretended that he was still alive because she was afraid that Ronald would kill her if she didn't go along with that plan.
Who is
And
Ronald?
then, girl, no, there is no Ronald. We'll find out there is no Ronald. But girl then literally asked Greg if he knew anybody that would be willing to take the fall for Abraham's murder. Like, why would you assume that Greg would know somebody who would take the fall for murder? And like, if you don't know somebody that's willing to do that, why do you assume that a black man would know somebody who is willing to do that?
Hey mom, would you
But
be willing to take the fall for murder for me?
no, I'm good. Like, I'm comfortable in my little happy life here. I'm not doing that. But
Did you
Greg just
send me
told her
care
he would
packages?
think about it. Because he needed to go consult with the police and figure out how they want to handle that. So he just told her he'd think about it. And so the cops decide to go along with that plan. And so they send an undercover cop with Greg to pose as his cousin. And they make up a story that says that he's already facing some charges. And, so he's going to be facing a lot of time anyways. And that he's willing to take the fall. But, he says he needs more details so that when the cops interview him, he can make it realistic about, how he was killed and where the body is. And then he also asked her for $50,000 to take the fall, which she agrees to.
That's not enough.
So, yeah, but so she told Abraham, she told him that Abraham is buried under a concrete slab in the backyard of her boyfriend's property.
Oh shit. Okay.
Yeah, so I mean, you'll see later she tries to distance herself, but I'm like, his body is literally on your boyfriend's property. Like, there's no way to distance yourself from this.
Yeah, obviously.
And she, tells him that he had been shot. And so then they tell her that they will have to move the body so the police won't be able to tie it to her. Because they're like, well, if I tell them where the body is and they see that it's on your property, it's going to bring you back into it. So we need to like make a plan to move the body and, to protect you. That's the story they tell.
Okay. So to protect her.
Yeah. A few days later, they meet again and she literally gives the undercover cop the murder weapon.
Oh
She admits that it's her gun, but says that Ronald used it to kill Abraham. She then led him to the backyard and pointed out where Abraham was buried.
my God.
And she had parked a trailer to block the area from the street so that no one could see them dig it up. And then she had tools for them to dig the body up. And then inside of the trailer, she b also bought all kinds of supplies that she could use. Or that all of them could use to move the body. So there was like plastic sheeting and a large tub that they could fit his body in, and gloves and bleach and all of the things. And she had, they had her on surveillance tape buying all of that stuff at Walmart. So they know that she bought it.
Oh my God. Like, how dumb can
So
you
yeah,
be?
so she had this whole plan. She had it all worked out. But the next day, the cops went out and dug up Abraham's grave and found that he had been shot twice in the chest. And then this was something I hadn't really heard before, but she had cut off all of the metal parts from his clothing. So, like the zipper, belt buckle, buttons, like anything like that, she cut it off because she was worried that if anybody was out metal detecting, she didn't want them to find him because their metal detector went off.
Oh, okay.
I was like, that's kind of smart, but I've never really heard of somebody doing that before. But anyways, after the body is found, Dee Dee comes to the police saying that she wants to confess, but she doesn't want to confess to the murder. She says that Abraham and three men came in to rob her and that Ronald got her gun out of the safe, and then he and Abraham started arguing, and then Ronald shot Abraham, and again, don't know how Ronald would know the combination to her safe to get her gun out, but whatever.
Also though, like, why would Abraham rob her? He's the one with the money, in theory.
Well, and this all happened in his house, but anyway, she's trying to say she was not responsible for the murder, and that that she's only responsible for trying to cover it up, and that's because she feared for her life. And she says that she tells the cops that Ronald put the gun in her mouth and threatened her, and then she tells them that she peed herself. She's like, and I peed myself, and like, wanting to make herself like this very sympathetic character, that that's how scared she was of Ronald,
Oh my God.
which it's just stupid. You know.
It's so dumb, dude. Like, what is okay.
Yeah. Well, and then she was saying that these guys are like big time drug dealers that are working on this $40 million deal. So the police are like, why would they rob you if they're these like super wealthy drug dealers that have this huge deal going on? Like, there's no reason for them to rob you. So when it's clear that the police are not buying that story, she decides to throw her kid under the bus. And she says that her 14-year-old son shot Abraham
Oh my God.
because he was assaulting her, and that her son walked in, saw that Abraham was assaulting her, and that he killed him in order to save her life.
Sounds incorrect.
What kind of sick bitch would throw their kid under the bus and say that they did it when clearly she did? Like, I could never imagine telling the police that you all did something that I did. I would never want you guys to take the fall for something I did. Like, I just don't get that. That's not a mother. That's not how you do.
No, and like clearly she's not a good person, but like that's your kid. Come on. Like I don't know. I
Yeah.
don't.
Yeah. So she gets really frustrated that they're not believing her story because they were calling bullshit on everything she was saying. They were not shy about the fact that they knew that she did this. So she, storms out of the station, which she was allowed to do because at that time they had not drafted the arrest warrant. But as soon as she left, they started working on that.
Yeah,
And
classic.
then Yeah, and then they also ended up meeting with her ex-husband, and he told them that Didi had reached out to him in April, asking him to dig a hole in her boyfriend's yard. And she had bought a backhoe and said it was to get rid of trash. Now, apparently her ex had done some like that kind of work before of like using a backhoe and digging a hole. I didn't realize that's a thing people do, that they'll just dig a hole and bury their trash. That seems strange to me, but maybe that's a thing people do.
I mean, I guess it doesn't shock me. It's just weird.
Yeah.
I guess that's,
So
well, I
he
mean, it's
did
not
dig the
common,
hole.
but anyway, sorry.
But he did dig the hole and then he left. But then a little while later, she called him back and asked him to fill in the hole.
Oh.
And then, of course, it's like nighttime and it's dark. So he's like, we can handle this later. And she was like, no, I'm having somebody do an inspection on the house in the morning, so I need it filled in tonight.
Oh.
So he agreed and he came back and filled in. And he could see that there was like, it looked like concrete in the hole, but he couldn't see anything else because she had poured concrete over Abraham's body. So he didn't know there was a body under the concrete, but he couldn't really see anyway. So he filled in the hole,
Right.
in order to help her out.
Oh, that sucks. Like, that would
And
suck if
he,
someone asked me
yeah,
for a
he offered.
favor and then it ended up being like an accessory to murder, you know?
Yeah, that he didn't know,
No, I
or
know.
accessory to hiding the body,
Yeah.
and but he did say that she looked a mess, like she was dirty and sweaty, and she looked like she had done a lot of physical labor. But he just couldn't see what was in the hole. So clearly, at that time, that's when she was like moving his body in there, and I don't know if she did it alone or if her current boyfriend helped or whatever. But yeah, so she had clearly moved the body there, and poured the concrete and buried him. So she ended up being arrested a few days after that phone call. And then November 2012, the trial starts. Greg testifies about all the things he witnessed. Like he had seen her actually typing the letters that were supposed to be from Abraham. And he also was with her when she would buy cell phones. And she would have him register cell phones in different people's names. So, like, there was a cell phone registered to Ronald. So she could say, oh, see, like Ronald is a real person, and she would send herself texts from that phone. And then during the trial, they also had a financial advisor testify who was able to show all of the money and assets and everything had been transferred to Dee right before his death. So like clearly she was the one with the motive because she had stolen all this stuff from him. And then a personal assistant of Abraham's testified that just before his death, he started to become suspicious of Dee Dee. So again, if she had done all this and then he's starting to get suspicious, it would make sense why she would suddenly want him gone. But the really fucked up thing is that the personal assistant ended up telling Dee Dee that he was suspicious. And I don't know why you would do that. Like if your boss is telling you he's suspicious of somebody, you should keep an eye out and watch out for your boss. You shouldn't go tell the person that he's getting suspicious. So the girl was testifying that that's what she thinks happened is after she let Dee know that, Abraham was onto her, that she needed to get rid of him before she got caught.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't make
Yeah, so the belief is that Abraham confronted her in their home office and that she shot him there. And this is because there was some blood evidence in that room, but sections of the carpet had been cut out and replaced. So, probably like wherever his body landed, wherever the majority of the blood would be, that was the part that was cut out, but she didn't end up covering all of it, so they were able to find some.
Gotcha.
And then the defense tried to stick with the story that Dee Dee was in fear for her own life, and that's why she did all of the things to cover it up, but that she was not guilty of the murder, just of the cover up. But the jury didn't buy it, and she was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. And then they added an extra 25 years for using a gun in a violent felony, which I guess is a thing in Florida.
I've never heard of that.
So, but the main goal though is that they saw her as like a horrible person and were never going to let her out. The judge even said something about, her it, like it being such a heinous crime and the way she manipulated and lied and all of the things. So but she did change her stories many times, and one of the stories was that Greg did everything because Abraham was having an affair with his wife. So she was trying to pin it on Greg then and saying that she helped cover the body, because she felt threatened by Greg. But I mean, they literally had taped conversations between her and Greg where she, is telling Greg this other story, and Greg clearly didn't commit the murder because there was no conversation between the two of them where it implied that Greg had any involvement in his actual disappearance or murder. Her trying to change it to that, I mean, all of the evidence suggests that that's not true. And then she made multiple attempts to get a new trial, stating that her defense failed her by not calling with witnesses that could support her innocence. And her most recent attempt was just last year in 2023. But the witness that she had wanted to be called for that had passed away at that time while she was petitioning the court. But I mean, it just seems like there's like such a mountain of evidence that I don't think she ever will actually win a new trial. I mean, they've got all of the possible evidence. They've got forensic evidence. They've got her on tape. They've got, all the fraud stuff that's very clear. She was the only one that would benefit from his death. They've got all the shady shit she did to try to cover up. I mean, I don't think there's any way she'll actually win a new trial. In 2023, she did not. And then she was the one that knew where the body was buried. I mean, it just, yeah, it's clear that it was all her. But I do want to end this on a positive note. Oh, go ahead.
Oh yeah, I was just gonna say, I mean, the taped confessions itself is enough to like keep her there, is my point. That's all I was gonna say is
Yeah.
like there's no like she's not gonna get
Yeah, I
out
mean,
of that.
they, yeah, but there's so much, like, there's so much evidence against her. Like, I don't know why she, and she's still trying to maintain her innocence, and she cries and how she was manipulated and all these things. And it's like, I mean, even when you watch the tapes with her, you just don't believe her. It's just like
Yeah.
not
It's like clear she's like
realistic.
not. Yeah. Ugh,
Oh, and I forgot to mention this. But I think it was in the Netflix documentary. It's no longer on Netflix, so I watched it a long time ago. So, but I think it was in that documentary where they showed that she had like recorded him when he was upset, and she was like asking him leading questions like, "Oh, like, yeah, it really sucks the way people are taking advantage of you. Don't you just want to get away? Oh, where would you go if you were going to get away?" And he was like, "I don't know anywhere." And she's like, "Oh, would you go to Jamaica?" And he was like, "Yeah, maybe Jamaica." But she was clearly leading him to, so she was videotaping it. And so leading him to say that he might leave the country.
I remember that actually. That was on
So,
the Snapped or whatever. I think it was Snapped is what it was
or maybe
on.
it was Snapped. Yeah, I was gonna say it was on one of the shows I watched back in the day. But I went to look at the Netflix documentary. It's not there anymore. So yeah, maybe it was Snapped, but yeah, that was part of the story too. And it was like, I mean, so shady. Then that's super premeditated, like her trying to get him on tape saying he's leaving the country right before she vanishes him,
No, I mean, that's pretty blatantly obvious to me.
Yeah. But I do want to end it on a positive note. So there was one thing that was very clear, and that is how much Abraham loved his children. And in 2017, Antoinette Andrews, who was his first child's mother, and his son was a teenager at this time, this girl won $1 million on a $20 scratcher lotto ticket.
Hell yeah. Look at
I
her
know,
being
and I'm just
lucky.
like, I know, but like, what are the odds of two of them, like in the same family, essentially both striking it rich in the lottery? And again, it's $1 million. It's not as much as he won. But I really, if you believe in energy, I'd really like to believe that this was Abraham still trying to look out for his kids.
I love it.
And yeah, and she was reportedly really scared about winning and, after everything that happened with Abraham. So she said her goals were simply to get her son a car, pay off her bills, and then buy a house for her and her daughter to live in. So she wanted to like live a simple life and like fly under the radar. But I just think that's really cool that at least she, was able to come out of this well. And yeah, I don't know, because that did seem to be something that was really important to him, was that his kids were taken care of.
Yeah. Well, I love that. Like, I mean, like you said, $1 million isn't a ton in the scheme of things. I'd totally just like buy a house and like pay
Yeah.
off all of my debt.
But I mean, it is life changing to be able to buy a
Yeah.
house for cash, you know, I
Yeah.
mean it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, but I'm holding out hope that Centoria ends up winning the lottery too. Like, that would be amazing if he like gives her some good luck and she's able to like have
We
support
gotta
her
get these
child.
people just like go to Vegas or something. Like
Yeah.
I feel like they're lucky.
I was gonna say, I feel like he's got their back. So,
Yeah.
but anyways, that is the story of Abraham Shakespeare and the terrible D.D. Moore.
Well, thanks for telling that story. I do like that one. I think it's a very sad story, but I feel like that was one of the first ones that I ever like remember seeing on like I snapped or Forensic Files, whichever one it was. Like I remember that one. And
Yeah.
I remember being like,
Yeah.
this lady's fucking crazy. And I was like 10.
Well, and it's just so sad because, like, he was somebody that had been down on his luck, his whole life, but had been really trying hard to do good by his kids and his girlfriend and, to be a good person. And then to come into this money that, really could have been such an amazing, like, rags to riches story. And, like, and again, him being generous, that I think is great. I'm sad that people would take such advantage of him. But he just seemed like a really kind and wonderful human. And then wanting to trust somebody who was, saying that she could help him and educate him on these things. And then to have her, do all the things she did, it's just crazy. But that's a good reminder that, anytime somebody gives you some legal documents to sign, always have an attorney look at it, because most of us don't understand legalese. Most of us, it's like way over our head and we don't understand what we're signing. So, anytime somebody's trying to get you to sign something that you have any questions about, have somebody else review it and tell you clearly what it says you're signing away. Because people can manipulate, and once your signature's on there, it's done. So,
I mean, I think it's smart to always have someone look over anything like that.
yeah.
Because yeah, you don't want to be scammed.
Yeah.
So yeah, well, very cool. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Well, friends, if you like this episode, feel free to rate, like, review, whatever floats your boat. We really appreciate it. We have an Instagram you could follow, which is What the L Pod. We also have a Gmail account where you can just reach out to us and let us know of any topics you want to hear, anything like that, which is whatthealpod@gmail.com. And then we also have a Patreon you could follow and subscribe to. We have fun bonus content. And outside of that, I just want to say I appreciate you, Mama.
I appreciate you, baby.
And we appreciate you, friends. Bye.
Bye.